Hey there, if you are ready to build your service-based business from scratch and ditch your 9-to-5, then I want you to head on over to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap and download my free Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit. Again, you can head to shedidithowaypodcast.com/leap to download my Ultimate Leap Checklist and Starter Kit to get started on building your service-based business and ditching your 9-to-5. Hello and welcome to She Did It Her Way, a podcast dedicated to helping you launch a business that allows you the freedom to create from anywhere, design your own schedule in a way that supports you, and pursue what it is that lights you up. I'm Amanda Boleyn, your host, and it is time to do it your way. Today, we have the lovely Amy Porterfield joining us. Amy went from the quote-unquote corporate yes girl to having a top-ranked business podcast, best-selling online courses, multiple seven-figure revenues, and 250,000-plus loyal subscribers. Today, she shares her lessons with others, educating them on how to build their own time-leveraged, multiple seven-figure online businesses that don't rely on an 80-hour work week or a team of 40 to stay afloat. Join me for an honest conversation with Amy, where she shares her entrepreneurial journey with every rocky bump on the way to being her own boss and reaching the success she relentlessly worked for. In this episode, you will understand all of the unique stages from Amy's lead up, leap, and land, see why staying in an uncomfortable feeling is sometimes necessary to get to the next stage of your journey, learn the importance of email list building versus social media list building, uncover how doing what feels right helps you niche down, and discover methods for choosing a mentor. Let's go to the show. All right. Well, the lovely Miss Amy Porterfield is joining us on the podcast today. I would love for you to take us back to the moment when things really started to click for you and when you knew that this time around it was going to be different, right? Because the whole journey of entrepreneurship is we spend a lot of time in the beginning trying just to figure things out. So what was that moment that really, clicked for you?
Yeah. So looking back, I had left corporate and started to do consulting. And I thought it would just be really temporary because I didn't really want to do coaching, consulting. And I say consulting and coaching, but really I was, I guess, a service-based business as well, because I was doing social media for some clients in addition to putting together their marketing plans and all of that good stuff. So looking back, I knew that things started to really come together when I was able to let go of my consulting clients, which was 2 years in. So I thought this would happen way sooner. Mm-hmm. 2 years in, I let go of my consulting clients because I was finally starting to see some revenue come in with my online courses, which when I left corporate, that was the number one thing I wanted to do. I wanted to sell online courses around social media and marketing and all that good stuff. But I didn't know how to create a course, and I sure as heck didn't have an audience. So it took me a little longer than planned to get there. But I remember that moment when I let go of those clients. It's funny, Kesha was on the radio and I got up and I danced it out. Like I was freaked out to do it, but I was so ready.
I love it. And just doing physical action to create that energetic vibrational alignment. Yes. And getting into it. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, your journey with online marketing and you've built so many impressive courses in this business. Was there any resistance in the beginning? I know a lot of entrepreneurs, and including myself, had dealt with limiting beliefs or imposter syndromes when it comes to building an online business.
And say that question one more time, the first part.
Yeah, like anything in the beginning when you set out to create an online business, did you meet with any resistance around going down that path, or was it just full-blown, yeah, like, we are here to do it, girlfriend?
No, I wish. I wish I was like, I am ready, bring it on. I was fearful from the beginning. I'm a worrier by nature, so I had to be really careful about that. But I was so scared because, one, being in corporate for so long, and my corporate background, as you know, it was with Tony Robbins. So I was physically and mentally behind the scenes. Like, he's a big guy. I was never seen. I was not ever front and center. And so coming out from behind my computer, I was so embarrassed. Like, what are the people at the Robbins organization going to think of me when they see me teaching stuff online, when they see me making videos? And I would think, who am I to be doing this? Like, this feels so awkward, and I feel that I'm not qualified, although I had the knowledge, I had the experience, I knew what I was teaching, but oh my gosh, that voice in my head was so loud. Looking back now, I think they didn't care. They were into their own thing. They were worried about their own business or doing their own thing or staying at the Robbins organization. They were not watching me. Like, that is me. My husband reminds me, the world doesn't just revolve around you. And he says that lovingly, but in moments when I'm worried about what everyone else thinks, he reminds me, they're not thinking about you. You're good, girl. You're good. Keep going. So I had to let that go, but I was very worried what everybody else would think.
Yeah, it is the truth where it's people are not, we think people are thinking about us, but they're really not thinking about us because we're not that important to them. And I know Four Agreements talks on that piece as well of, you know, we're not that important that everyone is thinking about us at all the time. So at all times. Yeah. If you can take us through, break up your chunks of your entrepreneur journey into different stages. And how would you describe each stage? How many years did it last? How would you describe it? How did your mindset shift from each stage? How did your systems have to shift? How did Amy Porterfield have to change in order to go to the next level in each stage and journey of entrepreneurship?
Such a good question. So I alluded to the first stage, which was leaving corporate, thinking I would build an online course and I would do a big launch and make a lot of money because I was doing that for somebody else inside of the Robbins organization. So I thought, of course I could do this. So I went out on my own. Those first 2 years didn't happen that way. I had some flops with an online course I did create. My first one was a huge flop, didn't launch well. I didn't even have an email list really. And so the first 2 years, I would say they were the struggle. They were the years that every day I was uncomfortable, but I knew I needed to stay in that uncomfortable feeling in order to get to the next phase. And so I'd say a good straight 2 years. Then I finally, after some trial and error, a lot of trial and error, I created an online course that started selling slowly but surely. I don't have big success stories right out of the gate for sure. And so I'd say the second phase would be around some courage. Like, I was courageous in my second phase of business where I wasn't confident yet. Confident is I have a track record. I know what works. I know how to make a lot of money online. I know how to make an impact. I'm good to go. I was not confident, but I had some courage behind me because I had a little bit of blip of success with selling an online course. I was getting a name for myself. I, right around in my courage phase, I had landed a book deal with Wiley for one of those big yellow dummies books, how to market on with using Facebook. And so I was able to land a book deal with Wiley. I thought, holy cow, this is awesome. The reason I was able to land that deal is I was guest blog posting and I was posting on my own website regularly. So people were finding me and they knew what I was known for. I had started out being known for Facebook marketing. And so that was a really good phase, that courageous phase where I was still trying things, putting myself out there. I was speaking on stage, sometimes for money, sometimes for free. I was just starting to learn how to build my email list. That was helping with my online launches. And I was dabbling in just a few things. I was making connections. I was going to the right places, meeting the right people. So I was branching out for sure. And then from there, that lasted a good probably full year where things were moving, but slowly. The year after that is where I got into more of a phase where I was confident. I was making consistent revenue with my online courses. As you know, I let go of all of my coaching clients and I was easing into not speaking on stage for money. And instead, I only wanted to make money with my online courses or if I marketed somebody else's online course. I don't like coaching consulting, or at least I didn't back then. Now I'm kind of changing my tune, but back then I didn't want to do that. And I didn't want a bunch of streams of revenue. I wanted one main thing, but I was going to do it really well. So that phase lasted a few years where I'm making a lot of money. I'm doing really well. I'm known for online marketing and I am confident. I know how to make money online. We had our first $1 million launch and then our second launch was 2 million. Like, we were really in that zone. And that lasted up until recently. And recently, the money's still there. The launches are still successful. But I'm now in a phase that I think, okay, I'm ready to change things up a little bit. Ooh. And I always have this philosophy that the way your business looks today is likely going to look very different years from now. So allow yourself to experiment and pivot. And that's the beauty of building an online business. You can change things as long as you stay the course and not jump from shiny thing to shiny thing. Like I stayed with my very first successful program. I stayed with that for over 18 months before I launched anything else. So I have kept it simple throughout all of these phases. Where I'm at now is that I always said I didn't want to do a mastermind. I didn't know if I felt comfortable being with a small group of entrepreneurs and giving advice in the moment and being able to impact them right then and there over, let's say, a weekend or whatever it might be. And I think it's taken me a while to get to the place that I am craving those inner circles with my audience because I know I can make a difference for them. And so I'm starting to explore maybe doing a mastermind or a small group coaching program. I don't know what it will look like, but literally 2 years ago, I said, no, thank you. I don't want anything to do with that. So I think I've grown and I've matured in my role as a leader in this business I have and a visionary. So I think things are going to look a little bit different and I'm going to branch out from just selling online training courses.
I love it. And I know what I love about your website, when you go to it, you have it it's very clean, very simple, very user-friendly, where people can go and say, okay, I need a list. I need a product. I need to sell more. And you just are such an amazing guide to people who use your products and services and get that information. When you look back at your different phases, so phase one, you left corporate America. Phase two is really the courageous. Phase three is the confident. You've done it. You've had proven success. And now four, it's how do I look at my business differently? Anything in particular, when you look back at phase one and two, that you would have done differently to accelerate that growth? And this isn't to say you have regrets or anything, but from a tactical standpoint, is there something maybe you wish you would have done differently that would have helped accelerate even faster?
Oh, 100%. I know exactly what the answer is. List building. And so I didn't focus on building my email list until about 2 years in. And I was in a high-end mastermind that I paid somebody else $24,000 a year to help coach me with a group of 20 entrepreneurial women. And she would tell me every time we would meet, how many people are on your list? Every time I said 600, like it never moved. It went down and then maybe up a little and then it would stay at 600. And for 2 years, she said, Amy, you have to focus on your email list. But everything was exciting at the time. An email list, I didn't see it was going to make me money right away. So I would go speak on stage and get paid, or I would put together a marketing plan for someone and get paid. I was always looking for the next paycheck because I was afraid that if it didn't come in, I couldn't pay the bills. I was definitely living month by month for a good year in this business. And so what happened was I launched my first program in that very first 2 years, and it was a bomb. It was horrible. And it was because I didn't have an audience. And now I say, and I tell my students this, the energy of your business is directly tied to the strength of your email list. The energy of your business is directly tied to the strength of your email list. And the reason for that is the energy, meaning the movement with people getting engaged and wanting to read your emails and buy your stuff, that happens more often in your email list versus social media. And so you have to focus on building an email list if you're doing business online, because that is where the longer, more loyal connections are going to come from. They might see an offer 2-3 times before they buy, but they're seeing it through email. They're not paying as much attention through social media.
Mm-hmm. So true. Well, talk to us then too. You have your philosophy, which is your action by action versus step by step. How do you apply that to email list building and starting out from the very basics and beginning?
I have this philosophy that every single day I'm taking action, moving my business forward, and it's an action that's going to make a difference. And so when it comes to building your email list, the first thing you want to do is ask yourself, do I have a core lead magnet? Do I have a freebie that I could mention on a podcast or mention on a Facebook Live or social and drive traffic to one web page that the only thing they're seeing on that web page is the offer I'm talking about, a cheat sheet, a check checklist, a free training video. And in exchange for their name and email, you are going to be emailing them something free that is valuable. Everybody wants to start, or you, everybody should start there in order to start building that email list. Just start with one core lead magnet, one that could cast a pretty wide net where it would attract most people in your audience. And there's so many different things you could do with this, but that's where you want to start. So if you're thinking, well, how do I even grow my email list? You get into action and you create that one freebie, you get that web page up, you write an email that says, thanks for signing up, here's what I promised you, and you get that going. From there, you can make it better, but I always say, let's strip away the bells and whistles and let's just get to the basics first.
I love it, and just ship it and make it happen to get that momentum. Now, I think, you know, part of creating that lead gen or that opt-in is really understanding your target market and who you're talking to. I would love for you to share a little bit about your journey in niching down who you are now talking to and what that process was like. Because I think a lot of people, and I hear from my listeners when I talk to them, is that they have, and I have experienced this as well with the podcast and the brand, is, you know, wanting to talk to everyone, but realizing that the riches are in the niches. So I would love your journey and insight about, you know, how you got yourself to niche down and what that looked like.
Yes. So when I first started, I taught, like I said, Facebook marketing. So I was really just teaching to everybody who wanted to know about Facebook marketing. And back then, this is almost 10 years ago, everybody wanted to know about it. So I was attracting people from all different areas of business and ages and backgrounds and all that good stuff. And then I realized, as I kept listening to mentors, that I needed to really find my ideal customer avatar. I started to think about that more and more. And when it finally came to me, and I'm a slow learner, so it took a few years, I had launched a program called the Profit Lab, and it taught people how to build their businesses online with list building and Facebook marketing and some other strategies. Well, I had launched it twice already, and it was pretty successful. But what was happening, and this is so valuable for the listeners right now, what was happening for me, why I knew I hadn't found my ideal audience yet, people were asking me questions that I either did not know the answer to, or I felt really uncomfortable answering. Specifically, ooh, I have a physical product, Amy. I sell on Amazon. I sell t-shirts. I sell soaps. How would this apply to me? I've never sold a physical product in my life. And my motto is, I don't teach what I don't do.
That's
and
a really, so, just a pause really quick. Sorry to interrupt, but like what you just said, from it's, you're almost paying attention to it's what's not being said and how on the receiving end, as an individual, as a teacher, as a guide, feels when people, when students ask you questions, and if it doesn't feel right, then that is another way to help identify the target market. Okay. That was really good. I love that.
Yeah. I'm glad that you like that too, because that was a big aha moment for me. I thought, I'm uncomfortable and I'm not loving these Q&As that I'm doing inside the program. And so the next time I launched it, I was so afraid to do this. I remember I was talking to a friend like, this could really screw us up financially. So I just want to warn you. She was helping me work inside the business. And I said, I'm going to put in my messaging for this next launch, I think it was the third time I had launched it, that this course is for those who want to create info products, who want to sell online courses and trainings or live workshops online. It is not for someone who sells a physical product. And we put it out there because I thought, I just have to experiment with this. And boom, it just connected. I actually had the biggest launch because I think people could then say, oh, this is for me. She just put it out there. I want to create an info product. This is for me. And those that had a physical product, crazy enough, I've heard this before, and I can't believe I'm saying it for myself. People who had physical products still bought, but they, I was then able to say, okay, I don't have expertise in that. So you might want to go see what so-and-so is saying about it, and then you can apply it here. They bought it knowing that I said it's not for physical products, but they saw something in it, and more power to them. But I wasn't afraid to say, that is not my expertise here. And it gave me so much freedom in my online course to use examples that I was really excited to use, where before I would add these examples of physical products and other things that I didn't know a lot about because I thought, I've got to serve these people as well. Now I'm just like, no, I'm going to do exactly what feels right. And that definitely helped those that I did want to serve get to the finish line faster. So it was a really big moment for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that little tidbit that you shared about the feeling and understanding if it resonates or if it doesn't. And we have primary markets, and they're obviously secondary markets that people will just naturally show up for. But like to your point, not committing or saying like, you know who you're targeting and other people are going to show up, and that's great too. So when you look back, what has been one of your biggest hurdles that you've had to overcome and work through?
I definitely think it's my mindset. When I work back with Tony, I remember him saying that 80% of being an entrepreneur is what you're thinking, and only 20% has to do with the mechanics, the strategies and such. And I have to mind my mind a lot. Like I said, I'm a worrier. And so I can naturally go to, yeah, but what if? Or I remember after every launch, I think, yeah, but what if next time it's not the same? And I wouldn't even celebrate in the moment. And so I have to be very careful of what I think, because I know that your thoughts create feelings and your feelings create actions. Your actions create results. And so if I could pick a better thought that would lead me down the line of better feelings and actions and results, then I'm going to show up and do that. So probably on a daily basis, and this happened way more back then. So like a lot that I didn't actually back then, I didn't know this. So I struggled more. Now I'm very aware of it in that I always have to choose a different thought. Nope, that's not going to serve me. Let's choose a different thought. And I'm practicing this in my mind a lot because my mind will take over. When you're building your online business and you are your own boss, at the end of the day, it is all on you. And that we can't sugarcoat. It is your business, your vision. You hired these people to do what you want them to do. It still falls on you. That doesn't mean we have to carry it in a heavy, scary way. It just means that we need to choose how we're going to think about that. And instead, I'd rather choose, holy cow, how lucky am I that I don't go into an office every day. I get to call the shots and I create what I want to create. Bring it on. I've got to really spend time there instead of, holy cow, this is all mine.
Yeah. Well, and kind of lead into the next question then. How do you select, because community is so important, especially, I mean, I think in any stage of entrepreneurship and even more so in the beginning because of the whole thoughts create your outcome and your experience. How do you select who you get coached by, what mastermind you join? I mean, what does that mentorship look like for you?
I love that. So I love to gravitate toward men and women that have a little bit of mix of a compassion as well as they think very highly of themselves. And this is something that I've learned along the way. Just because if I were to say, I am amazing, doesn't mean that I don't think you are amazing as well. I want to own it in me so that I can see it in others. And I am really quick to point out things I don't like about myself. I think that's very normal of many people, and I am guilty of that. So when I'm looking for a mentor, I want somebody that I can aspire to be like. I want somebody to look in the, that they look in the mirror and think, I am kicking ass today. This is working for me. As well as they care deeply about the people they serve. And so those are the two things that I look for. I also look for somebody who's gone before me and they've done what I want. So back in the day, you're familiar with Marie Forleo, right?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah. She's a hot shot in our industry. And back in the day when I was still at Tony Robbins, I had learned about her. And right when I quit, she was the first mastermind I joined. It was called Rich, Happy, and Hot. And I did not tell anybody that was the name of it. I was so embarrassed. But she, that's her personality. I love that she put it out there. And she had a business where she sold online training courses. And I thought, that's exactly what I want. So I'm also looking for a proven track record of a business model that I would want in my own business as well. Super important to me. And so they have to have gone before me. They have to have had success, and they're willing to show me how they've done it. And so that's what I'm always looking for.
Such great advice. I have one more question before we enter rapid fire. And the last question I want to end before rapid fire is, what is something you're currently working on now? Both, I know you mentioned for your business about, you know, looking at masterminding, things like that. But what are you working on personally, family, maybe anything that you personally are going through and working on?
Yeah. So I fell back into working too much. I've had ebbs and flows. Like, I've got this, I'm quitting work on time. You know, when you work from home, you can gravitate toward your office at all hours. So I got really good at saying, no, I'm done working. I'm with my family. This is perfect. And then things started piling up and I've been working too much. And my husband, Hobie, he is a firefighter. So he works every other day for 24 hours. Mm. So I have to be very careful with his schedule to make sure I make time for him and my son, Cade. And I haven't been. And my husband, I love this about him. And if you have a spouse or a partner, encourage them to speak up about this. He said, all right, babe, it's too much right now. I don't see you enough. You're not present. You got to come back to us. That's what he uses. Come back to me. And so he made me very aware and I realized, holy cow, he's right. So I have been working on looking at my calendar and thinking, does it need to be this busy? What's happening here that I am piling it on yet again? So I'm very mindful. I know the strategies to fix it. I know what needs to be done, but I love to work. Mm. And so it's very easy for me to pile it on. So my family means more to me than my business. And that's what I'm working through right now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Yeah. So rapid fire, these are really quick hits, whatever comes to mind. What is something in your life that is a non-negotiable?
Ooh, my mornings. I have the first hour, just me, no work.
Mm. What is the one thing, where do you get your inspiration from?
Audiobooks and podcasts. They are in my ear every minute I'm not doing something with a family or business.
What's your favorite book?
Okay, so I love this book, Rework. It's a business book, Rework. I love it. And I love Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes.
Oh, okay. I'm going to Year of Yes, Shonda Rhimes.
It's so good. So good.
Yeah. Love it. We will link to that. What is the best $100 or less purchase one can make in their business?
A good microphone, a Yeti mic.
Yes, 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 yes. And last, of course, my favorite. What's your favorite Real Housewives crew?
Oh, New York by far. Oh my gosh.
They are getting a little offhand lately.
They are getting crazy. It's my guilty pleasure.
Oh yeah. No, this season I'm like, sometimes I have to pause because if my mind wants a break, I have to pause. I'm like, okay, that's just a lot right now, but we'll get back to it. Okay.
Oh yeah. My husband, if he comes in the room, I turn it off because he's like, are you crazy? Turn that off.
You're like, no, I'm not watching it. I was not just watching it. Awesome. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, Amy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate your energy and time. Share with my listeners where they can learn more about you, find your podcast, and all your good information that you have.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an honor. You can find me at amyporterfield.com, and my podcast is Online Marketing Made Easy.
Love it. And definitely make sure you check out our podcast. I love it, love it, love it. Every time I listen, I get such good advice and tips. Aww. And downloadables, everything. So Amy, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's podcast episode. For more information, check out shedidithirway.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to leave me a review on iTunes and let me know what you think. Until next time, keep doing it your way.